215044, Mark Campbell et al. Versus Cheatham County, Tennessee Sheriff's Department et al. Arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Williams for appellant.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Robin Williams, and I represent Deputy Doug Fox. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, we're here today on the case of Mr. and Mrs. Campbell versus Deputy Fox as a result of a knock and talk that the deputies did in August of 2018. That resulted in some shots being fired into the residence. We first contend that there was actually no seizure in this case. The evidence is clear and undisputed that Mr. and Mrs. Campbell were not struck by any bullets, thank goodness. But we contend that there was actually no physical force or show of authority that resulted in a submission by Mr. Campbell or Mrs. Campbell.
There was a show of authority, right? I mean, I don't know if there was a termination of movement or a submission to the authority, but the shots were surely a show of authority, weren't they?
I think that's kind of questionable because at the point that the shots were actually being fired, Your Honor, I think you could argue that that was self-preservation. Is it a show of authority when an officer is retreating and firing in self-defense?
So if I fire and miss and the suspect puts their hands up and says, okay, I give up, they're not seized because there was never a show of authority?
No, Your Honor. In that case, they're trying to get the person to do just that. In this case, the deputies weren't trying to get Mr. Campbell to come out and be aggressive towards them. They were actually just trying to do a knock and talk. So when it resulted in him opening the door and then believing that he had a firearm and they retreated, I don't know that firing at that point would be necessarily a show of authority.
Do you have any cases that say that firing shots is, I mean, that's not a show of authority?
I do not, Your Honor.
That seems odd to me. Then the question is whether there was a submission to authority, which there doesn't seem like there was. What do we do with the cases that talk about a termination of movement? And I know that those are, you know, kind of the roadblock cases or whatever, but we've got some kind of police standoff cases where somebody has a hostage situation and is not essentially free to leave, even though they haven't submitted to authority. Why is that not applicable here, that kind of case?
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not sure that I fully understand the question. Obviously there's a line of cases that deal with passengers and vehicles, and there's clearly an intent and a knowledge that when you stop that vehicle, you're going to stop everyone within that vehicle, and so that they would be seized. Because I know those lines of cases talk about passengers also being seized when you've struck the driver, for instance. In a case like a hostage situation, like the Walski case, you know, this court said that the hostages in that case were not seized. You know, that the intent of the officers was to actually have them leave the residence. There wasn't an intent on their part.
I thought the shooter or the hostage taker himself was seized. The district court had said he was not, and then I thought we said that he was. We granted qualified immunity, as I recall, but we said that he was seized,
you
right?
You did, Your Honor. He was seized, but the wife and son, there was an argument that the wife and son were also seized, and the court dispelled that and said that they were not seized because there was not an intent.
Okay, so why isn't Mr. Campbell like the hostage taker in Iwalski?
Well, in this case, there was no perimeter. There wasn't a show of force there with a warrant that was in a hostage negotiation.
Would he have been allowed to leave if he had just said, okay, guys, I'm going to walk away? Or conversely, clearly he wasn't allowed to remain in the house. They surrounded it, and they certainly were not going to just go away. If there was no show of authority, they would have just said, okay, see ya.
In this case, Your Honor, they did not surround the residence, and Mr. Campbell did.
I thought they caught him when he went out the back door. Wasn't there somebody in the back?
That, yeah. Well, what happened was, Your Honor, is that the officers, the deputies retreated. And one thing, I think you can look at that video, and it's very clear that these deputies are not in control of this situation. Mr. Campbell is.
So they called a bunch more people to get control of this.
They did call backup, and at some point backup arrived, but no one ever circled the back of the perimeter. Mr. Campbell exited the home and left.
But he exited through the back, and somebody got him in the back.
He did. He exited the front of the building multiple times and cursed the deputies, and you know, and then he ultimately exited the back. I mean, I think that's very clear that there was no submission on his part. And if you're apprehended by different officers, you know, away from the home, there's certainly no submission to Deputy Fox on that occasion.
Well, I don't know that the fact that he ultimately exited in the back where he was apprehended by somebody else, I'm not sure how much you can infer about Officer Fox's conduct from that. I mean, it seems Officer Fox's conduct is what it is, and he's shooting into the front of the house, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And there was no submission to his authority at that point. And when Deputy Fox continued to...
Well, what does he have to do to submit? I mean, he doesn't have to come out and say, I give up. He can just effectively be unable to leave. And under our case law, that would appear to constitute a seizure.
Well, under Iwalski, it would, Your Honor. But in this case, he did leave. He had freedom of movement. He left. He was clearly the one in control of the situation. And he exited the back, went around the side of the house, and was apprehended, you know, somewhere later, not in the back of the house. But he had freedom of movement. I mean, he's still fleeing at that point when he's apprehended by other deputies. So there's no submission to Deputy Fox. And so I would contend that there is no Fourth Amendment seizure that occurred in this case. If Your Honors felt that there was a seizure, we would analyze...
Do you believe that a reasonable person would have felt he was free to leave with the officers around his house and shooting inside it?
Well, Mr. Campbell did leave.
Well, but would a reasonable person have believed he was free to leave?
I don't know that under the standard, would a reasonable person think that he was free to leave? Most people would not under that situation. But again, it depends on it. In this case, Mr. Campbell argues that he wasn't even... that he didn't know that it was law enforcement that was out there. So he was clearly not trying to submit to any show of authority. And with regard to Mrs. Campbell, she was certainly just unknown to even be in the residence. And I can see you have a question.
Well, was it reasonable for Officer Fox to shoot into the house?
It was, Your Honor.
And why?
In this situation, I mean, you can quite clearly hear on the video that Mr. Campbell asked the officers if they had guns. When they said, what? He said, do you have guns? And he said, because I do, or I have one, and then opened the door within seconds of making that statement. That statement, coupled with him opening the door, created, you know, a situation that was dangerous, an imminent threat to the deputies. And
what happens? Where is he when the shooting starts?
I'm sorry?
Where is he when the shooting starts?
When the shooting starts, he's opened his door and he's on the threshold of his door.
And the officer starts to shoot with him on the threshold?
Yes.
Or shortly after he's gone back inside?
No. With him on the threshold. The first two shots are with him on the threshold. He slams the door and four more shots are fired within seconds. I mean, all of the shots are fired within 3 seconds.
I want to tell you that I tried to watch the video right before this to refresh my memory, and I didn't have time to get through it, but I assure you I will look at it again.
And yeah, you have to slow it down and, you know, pause, and, you know, I played on very slow-mo, but you can see Mr. Campbell opening the door when the shots are fired. And he does close the door, like I said, and four more are fired.
And it's undisputed that he had something in his hand?
It is undisputed that he had something in his hand. He claims it was a cell phone The deputies believed it was a weapon, still believe it's a weapon, and that he was raising it in their direction. I think when you listen to the entire video, you can hear the deputies retreat to their vehicle. They are saying, what did he have? What did he have?
Sure. He's raising it. Is he?
The deputies believe, their version, of course, is that he was raising it and pointing away. They believe it was a gun.
We have to look at the other version.
You do.
And
there's no.
I thought from the record, at least initially, the officer's side doesn't say that he had anything. At least some of the time, they didn't. They then do a little bit later, and I thought his statement was, well, he might have had a cell phone.
He definitely says he had a cell phone, and the deputies from the beginning said he had something. They didn't say what. They have a conversation at the car. And it's all on the recordings, but they do have a conversation at the car initially where they're like, what did he have? Now, whether they intended what kind of weapon he had versus what did he have, was it a weapon, that's unclear. There's nothing in the record that qualifies that. But it is very clear that they were in fear of their lives, and they retreated and hid behind their vehicles for 15 minutes while Mr. Campbell had free rein to come in and out of his, you know, his residence and yell at the deputies and then exit out the back. Your Honor, I see my time is up, so I'll yield my time.
Mr. Morris.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is John Morris, and I represent the Campbells in this matter. Your Honors, a lot has been said about whether there was a seizure, but I would like to back up in the origins of our Constitution to something that's even higher than the seizure of the person. I think Sir William Pitt, a great Anglo-American jurist from the 18th century, said, "The poorest man may in his cottage bid defiance to all the forces of the crown. It may be frail, its roof may shake, the wind may blow, the storm may enter, the rain may enter, but the King of England cannot enter." And from Sir William Pitt's writings and that presentation before the House of Commons, ultimately, we got what we now know as the Castle Doctrine and the protections in the Fourth Amendment that our founders put in place that say of those things protected in the Fourth Amendment, the home, the person, property, the home in our jurisprudence has always been held at the top of the pyramid. Whether Mr. Campbell was seized in our jurisprudence, and I will point out that all of the cases that have addressed this that I've looked at, that are cited, talk about fleeing felons or fleeing people in a public space, not in their own home. This man was in his own home. Furthermore,
this is what the case comes down to, and I'm curious. It doesn't seem to me that he submitted to authority. So then the question is, how much movement is enough to be effectively fleeing? He was in the backyard when he was apprehended. He testified that he had walked by some police cars before they finally recognized him and arrested him. Why is that not like essentially like a fleeing suspect?
Your Honor, I think there are a number of angles to look at. First off, this court in Jacobs v. Allum in 2019 addressed an issue where a man retreated into his home after being shot at. And they determined that that was, in fact, a seizure by Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, a case also cited by Judge Crenshaw. But I think we need to step even further back here and look at the fact that when the police arrived at Mr. Campbell's home, they did not announce that they were in law enforcement. So these men walked up to his door at 9:30 at night in rural Tennessee. Now, I'm from rural Kentucky originally, from Hopkinsville. I live on my family farm part-time. And I will guarantee you, if someone comes to my door at 10 p.m. and knocks and says, "Hey, John, come out here, let's talk," they are going to, and legally so, likely be greeted by the wrong end of my home defense shotgun, because there's no reason for someone to be beating on my door at 10 p.m. when I am simply sitting there watching TV or napping. So from the very onset of this issue, we have a man who's legally in his home doing nothing, and I'll point out that the community caretaker or, you know, welfare check call was based on some very poor location analysis of the, these two 911 calls that came in that did not come from phones belonging to the Campbells. So they show up at his home, they beat on his door, they say, Mark, come out here, and he says, you got a gun? I got one too. Well, this very court has addressed the fact that simply saying you have a gun does not put you in a position where police have a right to use deadly force. Even having a gun in your hand without a show of a threatening maneuver does not constitute reasonable use of deadly force. So from the very beginning, these officers violated one basic premise after another. So the fact that Mr. Campbell did ultimately left the back of his home after having 8 rounds fired through the front door of his house is, to me, under the jurisprudence that I've looked at for this case, irrelevant. The Fourth Amendment was invoked the moment the threshold was crossed.
Irrelevant. I don't get that. I mean, the question is whether you've submitted to authority or whether you're fleeing or whether your movement has been terminated. And I'm just trying to understand what case. I mean, you agree that the law has to be clearly established, right?
Yes,
what case clearly establishes that this was a seizure?
So, Your Honor, in looking...
Give me a name.
In looking through the jurisprudence on for this, there is no case that addresses this particular scenario. And in Lanier...
Isn't that problematic?
Well, in Lanier, they talked about... It's a case that came out of the Sixth Circuit and ultimately went to the Supreme Court that said, you know, you don't have something... need to have something that's specifically on point... But something so basic and common sense as the fact that the home is a protected domain should establish that as known and precedential law.
Does that mean that shooting into a home, period, is always a seizure if they were only in the basement, let's say? I mean, one of my questions is kind of, is there a line drawing problem? Suppose they'd fired in the air. You know, suppose they'd fire, you know, way off in one direction just to alert him. Is it because, you know, any reasonable person would have thought they were aimed at them? Can you address that at all?
Your Honor, I would say that certainly if I were in the position of having to make a determination as to that line, I would say that firing in the air, firing a warning shot, certainly historically, is something that has been looked at as just that, a warning shot. But the moment the bullets crossed the container, the threshold, the curtilage of that home.
But then are you saying that if they had shot through the window over here and he's clearly standing over there, I mean, the house isn't suing, right?
But the home, as the castle of the person, is inviolate
It's when they're shooting at the house and hitting the house.
And in this case, Your Honor, they shot through the door where you heard the testimony that the officer says he saw Mr. Campbell in the doorway. Now, I would like to correct factually that Mr. Campbell, at the time of the shooting, in the video, which you will be able to review, had only cracked the door and looked through it. And when the shooting begins, he slams the door and hits the floor. He never crossed the threshold. And even if we look at a case like Cummings, where the officer sticking his foot in the door to keep the gentleman from terminating the engagement, that was a violation on the curtilage of the property and ultimately was resolved as being a Fourth Amendment violation. But, Your Honor, to your question about the restriction of movement, the time period after what happened here, after the shots were fired and these deputies retreat. And by the way, on the video, you will hear they don't know what he had in his hand until their supervisors get there, and suddenly it became a weapon. Since this case was filed, there have been two very important Supreme Court cases I think apply here. First is Torres v. Madrid, where the justices there said that force applied with the intent of a seizure is still a seizure even if the seizure is ultimately not completed. Now, in that case, the person was in a car and was struck by the bullets and still drove off. But my argument here is that same principle applies, that when the rounds were fired through the front door, and, Your Honor, Judge Boggs, your question about where in the home, these were fired at the space in the home.
I understand, but I was asking you the line, and your answer seemed to be anywhere would count. You may not need to go that far, but I'm trying to see what your point is.
I think what I would argue there is that, like so many of these cases, they are so fact-specific that if they had fired through a window 40 feet away, factually, that might be determined to not be an application, but certainly firing through the door where the person had just been seen makes it beyond question. Now, on that point, and what we have seen in the news over the last few years, is that firing through that wall away from the door can have unintended consequences. And Ms. Campbell was sleeping in her bedroom not too far away. And it is only through good fortune that neither of them ended up dead from these wildly fired rounds through the front door.
Well, I mean, that the example that you have in your mind, I'm from Louisville, is in the Breonna Taylor shooting, the one officer who went to trial, and this was criminal, you know, had fired multiple shots that went into other people's apartments. Now, I'm not trying to...
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm not trying to ask you whether he's got a good... Well, I am sort of asking you, under your theory, those people in the other apartment would have been seized and could sue the officer, wouldn't it?
That's a tricky wicket, because they were not the people who were the target of the...
You would say they weren't intending to seize these other people.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Maybe, so you're saying you need both, at least the application of force, whether it hits them or not, and the intent to restrain their movements.
And that would be consistent with the opinion in Torres, most certainly. And in addition to that, there was...
about the actual application of force.
I'm sorry.
Battery. Torres is about the application of force.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, if we go back, you seem to be a connoisseur of English history, but it had to do with a mere touching, of being a battery, and therefore the application of force with the intent to seize someone.
Yes, Your Honor.
But here there's no battery. There's no application of the force.
Yes,
I mean,
Your
this
Honor.
Is Todari D, right? This is the show of authority case.
It's show of authority, as I said, with the exception. All of those cases that talk about the firing at a fleeing suspect or firing at a person are in a public domain. This is in the home. And I would reiterate that under historical and constitutional and jurisprudence in this country perspectives, the home is inviolate. And look, there are a number of cases on this subject involving flashbangs and smoke grenades, right? And the question has never been, was the use of the smoke grenade considered a violation of the curtilage and therefore invoking a seizure? It was a reasonableness question in all of those cases. The fact that it was an application or show of force with the intent to restrain was a given, was a taken as a default.
I think the question about a smoke grenade, for example, is, I think it's Justice Gorsuch who talks about that issue in Torres, right? What things are going to be, what kind of battery is going to be enough? I mean, that seems to be a question that would be up in the air a little bit. And since I go back to this question of, we are looking for cases, we're looking for clearly established law, and I'm just kind of at a loss here. You're not giving me much to go on in terms of specifics. I mean, maybe I can help you out a little bit. The hostage standoff case may be the best one. I don't know, but I don't know that you cited it in your brief, so I'm not sure that you think it is, but I don't know. I'm looking for something.
Yes, Your Honor. I extensively researched this and came up at a loss to find anything truly on point, which is why I go back to the Lanier case to say there are some things that are just so basic that you don't need a specific case on point for it to be precedent and known law. But I think if we look at, even go back to the venerable New York v. Payton, and citing Jardines going back, I mean, these are cases that certainly my constitutional law professor David Hudson beat into our heads. These are the foundations of the application of the Fourth Amendment and the sanctity of the home. And I would argue that, again, this perimeter of the home, firing through it, and again, I will point out, firing through it while not having even identified themselves at police. The, you know, this court actually, in the case name escapes me, when talking about, it was Yates v. City of Columbus, where the officer went into a dark hallway to enter the front of a home and ultimately ended up shooting the individual. They said that kind of action on the police's part was not only unreasonable, it was beyond negligent. And in this case, the negligence and the misbehavior began the moment they knocked on the door and did not announce at night at a rural home. I don't have a case to point to you that's on point that says that firing through the front door created a seizure if the person walked out the back door subsequently. Certainly, Mr. Campbell didn't feel free to leave out the front door because he had officers out front with weapons drawn. But he went out the back and was ultimately seized, charged, and oh, by the way, under a relatively, again, recent case that just came out last month, falsely accused of a crime that was ultimately dismissed at the General Sessions level in Tennessee. Your Honor, I wish I had a better citation for this specific fact pattern. I simply couldn't find one. But to me, and my argument is, the home is sacrosanct, and firing through the front door and saying that's not a Fourth Amendment violation, I believe would make our founding fathers turn over in their graves. And I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honors.
Your Honor, Mr. Campbell clearly felt comfortable going out on the porch multiple times and cursing and yelling at the deputies. He didn't, you know, I think it's obvious he didn't exit out the front door to leave because he was sneaking away and he was apprehended on the side of the house.
Comfortable, you think?
Somebody
just fired shots into his house?
He repeatedly came out and yelled at the deputies, Your Honor. I mean, he clearly felt comfortable enough to come out and stand on his porch to do that. So I don't think we can go so far as to say he wasn't comfortable, you know, coming out of the front of his house.
I mean, but he's not fleeing. I mean, that I don't know. He's not leaving. He's not running away. He's not, I mean, I'm at a loss to kind of figure out how to characterize this, and I suppose if I'm at a loss, then maybe you win because it's not clearly established. Although, again, I go back to the hostage standoff case. I mean, that seems pretty close, maybe. I don't know.
I think it's probably one of the closer cases. I think you're right, Your Honor. However, in that case, there was a very specific intent to be at that residence, to surround it, to contain that individual. This is a completely different animal, where you've got deputies who are going to just do a knock and talk and have no intent to actually circumvent Mr. Campbell's ability to go out the back door. And then it turns into a self-preservation situation where they retreat.
But once they've retreated, if they really didn't, you know, want to keep him under control, they could just gotten in the cars and left. Said, okay, he's certainly alive. They did a welfare check. They wanted to see whether he was alive and mobile, and he certainly showed that.
I guess that's an option, but there was known to be a history of domestic violence at this home. They'd been there on prior occasions. They didn't know if somebody else is in the home. And frankly, Your Honor, when they knock on the door, it's not a common experience, and the sheriff testified about that, to have somebody say, do you have a gun? Because I do, even at 9 o'clock at night. I mean, a lot of warrants are served at night.
Doesn't that turn a bit on whether they knock and say, hi, we're from the Cheatham County Police. Sheriff's Office, we'd like to talk to you.
Do you yell that through the door? There's no requirement that you yell that through the door. I mean, deputies, law enforcement.
No, there's no requirement, but in terms of what's reasonable and what's reasonable to think on the other side, doesn't that have some effect on it?
I think what's important here, though, Your Honor, is when the deputies are confronted with a situation where, you know, they're asked if they have a gun. They don't know the situation within the home. They don't know if they have a hostage situation suddenly or a murder that's occurred. And then when they open the door and they believe that there's a weapon in his hand after he's given the threat that he has a weapon, it's reasonable and logical for them to retreat in the way they did and not leave at that point. But I think Your Honors are right. I mean, the Iwalski case is maybe one of the closer cases. It is, it's not completely on point, so I think qualified immunity does prevail in this case. The Jacobs case that Mr.
Well, why isn't it an obvious? I mean, it seems to be a pretty outrageous fact pattern, honestly. I mean, why isn't that? Isn't that tailor-made for an obviousness situation where we don't really need a case on point? It's just so egregious that it's got to be a problem, right?
No, Your Honor, not in this situation where they're there for what they were there for, and there was a threat made. If he hadn't made the threat...
But why didn't they announce that they were police officers?
Your Honor, because after he opened the door like a reasonable person, they would have announced. They weren't given that opportunity. There's no requirement that they yell that into the home.
But is it even a threat if somebody knocks on your door in the nighttime? It could be, land shark, pizza man, and he's saying, do you have a gun? If they said, no, we don't have guns, he would have said, okay, come on.
I think that would make any law enforcement officer's blood pressure go up to hear somebody say it in that manner. Do you have a gun? Because I do. And then opens the door.
He had a failure to communicate.
It is, Your Honor.
On both sides.
It is. Thank you, Your Honor.
We appreciate the argument both of you have given, and we'll consider the case carefully.
Thank you.